The following podcast is sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com.
Welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us again this week for another episode of H2O. My name is Jason Hunt, sitting across the way from Mr. Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
And a programming note. Let's just do this right up front. It is very likely, I think we've come to the conclusion that we're going to have to move the show. Normally, we drop this on Thursdays, and we're going to have to start putting it out on Friday. And the reason for that is because on Tuesday night, Saturday night, Doctor Who airs, and Sunday night, we have Walking Dead. And you are involved in the recaps for both of those.
Yes.
Recaps and reviews, which then we have our goal is to get recaps out by 2 days from the air date. So Doctor Who airs on Saturday, then we'd get a recap out on Monday. Walking Dead on Sunday, we'd get a recap out on Tuesday. That would be the ideal.
Yes, in an ideal world.
On Tuesdays,
in a world.
On Tuesdays, we record Level 117 after Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., because that's back now. And, of course, Agent Carter in the midseason, when that comes in, we'll be doing that. Wednesday is the meeting for the Independent Filmmakers Coalition, of which you're president of the board.
I am.
So you kind of have to sort of
It is recommended that I be there, yes.
So given that it's all Tim's fault.
that's right.
Saturday, Doctor Who, Sunday, Walking Dead, right. Monday, catching up on recaps for the both of them.
Hopefully, yes.
Tuesday, 11:11, Wednesday, IFC. That takes us to Thursday
right.
Before we can actually sit down and really
right. Because, I mean, if we could, and we've done this before, we recorded on Mondays.
Yeah.
But it becomes this thing where by the time, if we do that, then I've basically got 4 days that I am compiling information right. or recording. And that means that things get pushed further and further back that I can't, because unfortunately I have a day job that eats up an annoying portion of my day that should be spent.
Without internet.
Yeah. Where I should be writing and I should be doing artistic things, but there's this bill paying portion of my life that is required, which is irritating.
Yes.
But it becomes this, it's a strange thing. And previous years, just the realities of my life meant I had a lot more free time during the day
right.
that I could, you know, I wrote articles at work a couple of times. There's no way I could do now.
Yeah.
Because a significant chunk of my day is spent driving, or in running around through hospitals. So it becomes one of those, frustrations because there's like, I want to do this now. I can't. And the technology, while the technology is there for some of this stuff, my doctors have amazing voice to text software.
Yep.
And that is so
expensive. Are they using Dragon?
They're using Dragon.
Dragon.
It is so nice. But what is available for my phone is curious and erratic at best. And
well, it has to learn your voice.
Learn
how you speak.
But it also becomes this thing where you can, if you pause for too long while talking, it will stop, which makes sense.
Because you're done.
Yeah, you're done.
Yeah.
You've stopped talking. But then, of course, you have to save the text, and driving and using your phone is not recommended for a number of reasons, not least of which is the potential to, drive into somebody else.
Right.
So it becomes this thing where it's like, you know, we've played with this. We've tried. It's like, let's try this. Okay.
We've recorded on Tuesdays before of course, this is before the job that you've got now.
Right, which starts very, very early in the day.
So my
evenings are no longer my 1 o'clock, one a.m., 2 a.m. Night times are a
gone.
Thing of the past.
Yeah,
I'm afraid.
Because we've been able to get, and it's funny because we'll record half before Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm-hmm.
And then we record level 117, and then we record the back half of H2O. So it turns out to be a long night when we do stuff like that.
Yeah, and
And the fact that they changed the time on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and moved it up an hour
didn't
help that part. I mean, it was good for 117, but so we're basically having to juggle. And one of the things that I've been trying to do this year, going into the fall season, is not write so many recaps myself,
mm-hmm.
because with you now not available during the day, mm-hmm. and Leslie now on sabbatical for an indefinite amount of time, and basically the only time I'm the only one that's got the time during the day to sit and start and do articles and news articles and stuff, and so I'm delegating as much as I can. And just kind of managing things,
mm-hmm.
and in the meantime, looking for work, because I freelance as a media producer, so my time is a little bit more flexible than everybody else's, unfortunately, in some cases, because I just don't I don't work enough, but I do work enough,
exactly,
it's one of those things. So, it's one of those things I was sitting there going, man, I really wish we got paid for this.
I know.
We need that rich Uncle Otto to show up. And you see Bruce Brannett has put his office up for sale or lease or whatever, because he's moving into a new facility.
Right.
Brannett VFX, visual effects company here in town.
He's done work for things like Fringe, little programs like that.
Star Trek.
We know him. He's kind of cool.
Yeah, so he's moving his facility. He's moving he's getting a new office, and he's got his other one up for sale.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at the photographs that he posted, and I was like, oh, we mm-hmm. could really use that space.
Well,
that would be perfect for us.
The plaza's for sale as well.
Yeah, but I don't know that we want to buy a complete shopping district. I think we'll start small.
I'll give him a check. I'll write him a check for it.
Yeah.
I'll post-date it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it would be nice to do this full time and get paid for it. So we're just actually that we're doing.
So here's
the. And I know we've harped on that before.
Yeah,
people are probably tired of us hearing that.
Well, and it's not. Look, we have a Patreon and things like that for reasons, and the reasons are very simple because we want to be paid. That's so that we can support what we do and buy stuff for what we're doing, not so that we can make money.
Yeah, the Patreon campaign is specifically for. Resources.
It's
to get us stuff like equipment and office space and
sure.
stuff like that.
But the thing about getting when we talk about getting paid for this, what we're talking about is the very simple fact that we would have time. It would be mm-hmm. That would be your day. That would be because I would love to get up in the morning, start the coffee, go into the living room and turn on the computer and start writing.
Yeah.
And then maybe in the afternoon, go to a coffee shop and sit there with the laptop and have the world bustle around me as I'm shaping a story.
And if we had an office mm-hmm. space, then we could have a system set up there where other people could come in and edit video
sure.
or the podcasts or the different things like that. Mm-hmm. Because right now, all of that equipment is in my basement.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have a key to my house,
yeah.
there's not any way that you can come in. And, the equipment, half of what I've got with my computers and stuff, I use for my work. So, I'd like to have a system set up where somebody like Chris Jensen or Ali Ulrich or somebody could go in and could do the editing on some of our programming. And mm-hmm. I'm not up till 2 o'clock in the morning,
right?
Doing it. So,
and part of me misses being up till 1 and 2 in the morning because I am more of a night person than a day person. And I have had morning jobs
mm-hmm.
for most of my adult life, but I've never stopped being a night person. So it's always been this. There's always been this tenuous balance between enough sleep and being awake when my body wants to be awake.
Mm-hmm.
And now the nature of my job and the nature of when I have to be awake is kind of like, there's no balance.
Yeah.
It's go to bed.
It's gone. Yeah.
It's like, okay, I'll go to bed. I will lie down and do the sleep thing now. Yeah. And I still, you know, I still have, I still sleep less than you know, daily recommended allowances from your physician.
4 out of 5 doctors recommend
that you should get more than 4 out of 5 hours of sleep.
Yeah. My mother got told one time that she needs to have at least 7 hours of deep uninterrupted sleep.
Oh yeah,
which she never gets.
Right. They actually recommend that you should be getting 7 to 8 hours of sleep, and there's a host of medical and mental reasons mm-hmm. to do this. Not least of which is that we're designed to sleep about a third of our day.
Yeah.
That's the way the human animal works. And we are the modern first world societies don't really encourage that. This is the realities of having jobs and lives and families and all those things.
Well, and in some cases, 2 jobs yeah, because exactly. Everything, you know, the economy being the way it is.
So, I mean, it becomes this thing where, you know, you figure it out and you make it work and your doctor looks at you and says, you're an idiot. You're like, I know.
So, this is a
long way of saying we're trying to change the schedule a little bit by a day so that we can hopefully get things the way we want them to have, a schedule that we like. Because right now we're rolling out Doctor Who Doctor Who's rolling out on like Thursday or Friday, and Walking Dead's rolling out on Friday and possibly as late as Saturday. And that's just killing us because it's killing me because I'm the one doing them. And it's you know, because I feel like I'm not getting them out in the timely manner that I want them out, and certainly,
well, and given all of the different things that, you know, all the different recaps that we're about to be pushing out. I mean, mm-hmm. we're already, you know, Gotham is coming out now. Minority Report, Limitless.
Mm-hmm.
There's Fear the Walking Dead that you guys are doing. Chicks are doing an episode per show on that one. We got Doctor Who. What else is already out that we're doing? Oh, Steampunked. Sonya and I are doing reviews of Steampunked. So it's starting to pile up.
Yeah, which on one hand is great because it's all this
it's
stuff.
Content.
It's content and it's stuff that we can talk about and it's grist for the mill. But at the same time, it's also balancing that you know, oh yeah, I gotta pay the rent thing. I gotta give the guy the money, or else they sit there and go, I'm afraid you gotta go. So, and I don't want them to tell me that. I have my car's not so big that I can, you know, all my stuff won't fit.
Yeah, mine either. So the topic of the week. If you want to get involved in the conversation here, you want to send us your thoughts, it's h2o@scifi4me.com, or you can call our hotline 573-42-SCIFI. Mars. In the news
this
week.
The red planet.
Except where it's wet.
Yeah, which
might
is
be a little dark red.
Which is pretty amazing. We have in the last year had so much information come out through the various probes and the various all this data that we're getting back. The solar system is wet.
Yeah,
the solar system is really wet.
We need to clarify though that there's not the stuff that came out this week. The announcement they made this week is not the fact that there's water on Mars. There's evidence that there has been.
We've got to clarify that nobody's actually
found water.
Right. You're not. There's no swimming pools on Mars at this point. But we are getting evidence that there's this briny, heavily salty, liquid-ish. We have evidence of this showing up that is really exciting from the standpoint of, if we you know, Mars clearly doesn't have much of an atmosphere anymore. It doesn't, you know, it's very dry, it's very cold. It's not much in the way of habitable. As close to Earth as it is in terms of how similar to Earth as it is.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's any life on Mars at all, we're talking microbes, you know, microbial life.
Right.
And we know that microbes on Earth survive in insane conditions. I mean, there are microbes in Antarctica that are alive and thriving, and there are, you know, there's microbes in the driest of deserts, and there's all these tiny, tiny critters that survive in extremely, you know, harsh conditions on our planet. And the fact that there might be evidence that they're, you know, the kind of environment that a microbe could potentially exist in on Mars. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you think about it, that's the closest evidence we have for life on another planet. Yeah, of course it's speculation because we got to get a probe up there, and we have to get a probe up there that isn't going to contaminate the environment of the microbes, because that probe is coming from Earth, which has its own set of microbes that survive and crazy. So exactly. They got to figure all that out.
Yep.
But it also opens up the possibility that all the evidence we have points that this stuff is probably made out of the same oxygen and hydrogen, ultimately.
I tell you, that dihydrogen oxide will get you every time. Right?
Right.
Funny enough, though, the announcement of water on Mars, which came out on Monday from NASA, some people, rather cynically, are looking at this announcement, at the timing of it.
Yeah, okay.
Because The Martian, Ridley Scott's new movie with Matt Damon,
right,
just came out.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently Ridley Scott knew about this information 2 months ago.
Yeah, that's what he says.
He says that NASA told him, because when they were updating the science of the book to adapt it for film, they wanted to get as much of the science close as possible. So they're talking to the NASA guys and whatever, and said that they told him, and it was too close into post-production that they couldn't do anything about it.
Right.
But he said if they had known early enough, then Damon's character for certain would be going after the water on Mars.
Oh, of course.
But apparently, he said a full 2 months ago, NASA told him that they had found this on Mars. And you got to wonder why they waited this long to make the announcement. Now, the cynics are saying this is, you know, a conspiracy.
Right,
and, you know, it's part of the marketing for The Martian.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would assume that NASA wants to verify all of their data and make sure that they've got something that actually is accurate and true and whatnot. But yeah, the timing of it really is interesting.
I mean, yes, but coincidences happen. We know they do.
No such thing.
Yeah. You know, we have movie studios that put out two types of movie in the same year, separate studios that are not talking to each other, you know. How many? You talk about Mars. How many? Remember, two, three Mars movies in the space of a year?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, and the Christopher Columbus movies, you know, 1492, and what was the other
one? Those studios aren't sitting there and going, "Hey, Bob, we're going to make one. You want to make one? We're going to make two." No, they don't do that. It's
how many Long Island Lolita movies do we have in that one year?
Three
of them, right?
Yeah, something like that.
You know, these
things tend to come in twos and threes, and that's how these studios. But these studios aren't cooperating to create the films. They're not exchanging notes that they, you know, it just this is the way things work in the entertainment industry. And they catch on to a idea, and then somebody starts the process of producing the film. Mm-hmm. And Mars has actually been in the public consciousness for a while,
right?
You know, and then we have this book that comes out, The Martian. Which got a lot of critical acclaim when it came out for being a very interesting and exciting book.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the fact that Ridley Scott says a lot of things that ain't necessarily so. Because all of a sudden we've got, it's now, what, Alien Paradise Lost is the name of Prometheus 2?
Yes.
Now, suddenly, yes. After a couple weeks ago, he was talking about how, no, we're not going to connect it into the Alien franchise until the third Prometheus sequel. Yes. It's like, what?
See, funny enough, though, I was reading that Drew Goddard did an interview with IGN, and we had been talking about it. We talked about it on 1187 as it related to Daredevil, but also the main bulk of that article was about The Martian, because Drew Goddard did the screenplay for it, and they were talking to him about, you know, adapting and doing the science and you know, writing the script and all of these things. And he said that, you know, it's one of those things where you talk about the same kind of movies coming out all the time. He started working on the script when Gravity was released. And everybody was like, it's going to be just like that. And they went and saw the movie and it wasn't.
Right.
And then you had Interstellar come out. And everyone's like, it's going to be compared to Interstellar. And, you know, it's a different film. And Goddard's, you know, he said pretty much the same thing that you're saying there. Is these kind of things happen all the time.
Yeah.
I've had it happen to me.
Oh, sure.
When I was in college, the first time, I wrote a script for Star Trek The Next Generation. It's called The Center Seat. And I wrote it, and this is back when Star Trek had an open submission policy. Anybody could submit a limit of two scripts. You didn't have to have an agent. You didn't have to go through representation or anything. You could just send it to them.
Right.
So I wrote this script. And the first draft sat in the drawer for a year. A year it sat. Because, you know, whatever. College. I was stupid. So I pulled it out of the drawer, figured, okay, I'll update it, because by the time we rolled around and I was starting to work on a new draft of it, Wesley was gone. Ensign Roe was in the show now. So, you know, I'm making my modifications. I'm changing it. And the story basically was Deanna Troi's first time in command of the ship. And right when I finished the second draft, they had that that episode where they hit the cosmic string, and Picard's trapped in the elevator with the kids,
right?
And Riker's down in engineering, or somebody's, you know, somebody's on the planet or whatever, and there's Troi, and she's in command on the bridge. I'm like, dang it! And there was another one. Because Peter David wrote Imzadi, the novel, which was basically Riker using, you know, the Guardian of Forever and time travel and saving, you know, going back to save Deanna. And I had to abandon my my story about Data going back through the Guardian of Forever to rescue Tasha.
Yep.
I was like, dang it.
Yeah, it's... Yeah,
and those kind of things happen. I mean, there's there are no original ideas anymore. They're just original combination of elements. You just mix it in different ways.
Well, and I
ways.
Think that we also notice that some of these things, you know, you look at a show like Star Trek The Next Generation, and you look at that combination of characters, and you start asking yourself, what can I do that's different? What can I, you know? And some of those things lend itself. Well, you have a character like Deanna Troi who is, you know, not obviously, especially in the early seasons, not someone you would think of as being, you know, in command. Are you kidding me? You know, she, and you know, for the longest time, she wasn't even wearing a Starfleet uniform.
Yeah, that didn't happen until, until Picard was captured by the Cardassian, Kardashians. Different show.
Yeah.
What was that episode? That was because Ronnie Cox played the new captain,
right?
And he looked at her and he said, "Yeah, you got to wear a new uniform."
Yeah. So up until that point, you know, in some
Captain Jellicoe.
Yeah, she was kind of a glorified civilian
in the cheerleader outfit.
So you didn't necessarily think of her in a command role, but if you are
Well, she's medical staff anyway.
Oh, sure.
You wouldn't expect her to be in the command line.
So you know, there's a lot of reasons. So that becomes an idea that you can explore as go, well, mm-hmm. what if she was in command?
Yeah.
And so, you know, so you have these things that lend themselves to sparking that idea. And the fact that you had that idea and somebody else had that idea, you can see how the setup that the show gives you can sit there and, you know, if you let your imagination run, you can sit there and, you know, you're going to come up with a list of them, mm-hmm. and somewhere in there could be Troy in command.
Yeah.
And so you have something like Mars where we have the rover up there. And remember when the rover goes up there and we're all just, well, especially those of us who find this stuff interesting, we're just like, show me more. You know, because it's cool.
More
it's,
dirt.
It's exciting.
Oh, look, there's dirt.
But that's
more
it.
More dirt.
But we're looking at the feed going,
yeah, it's another planet.
It's more dirt. It's awesome.
Yes.
Ooh, that's new dirt. Yeah, because it is. It's another planet. And then you get the news from, you know, you get the news about, I can't remember the name of the moon now. Oh, it's skunkly in my head. That they're looking at as being mostly, they think it may have a huge, huge ocean.
Europa, Io?
Whatever one is spewing, it's spewing, they've got geysers swinging into the. But anyway, I mean, it's like you're watching this going, that's amazing. And we're getting all this data because we've got the probes out there that we've got the technology that you can get all this information. And so it's fascinating.
Insulatus.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes. I think I'm saying that right. I don't know. I could be saying that wrong.
But it's just cool. I mean, it's just really neat information. If you are at all interested in space, if you're interested in the idea of humanity getting off the planet and going exploring and finding, you know, the amazing stuff out of the history of our solar system and all this stuff, there's a wealth of information coming in now. And that's just, it's like Christmas. Every now and again, NASA just hands you a new box of toys and you're like, oh, this is cool.
Hmm.
And luckily none of this information has come back and it's a terrible sweater. You know?
speaking of odd Christmas presents, this just came across the feed here.
Oh, yeah.
Tracking board reporting that there could be a Ghostbusters animated feature in the works.
Interesting.
Yeah. No details other than that.
Okay, because would this be an animated version of the already existing feature of the cartoon that?
That's what I was wondering.
Or would this be an animated? Curious. Okay. Well, no. So we'll see. We'll wait and see
how that goes.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure how I feel about that. I'm also a little. I'm kind of amazed just how many of the original cast of Ghostbusters are now involved with the new Ghostbusters film.
And the cynics,
yeah.
are saying, well, it's the only way you're going to get anybody in to see the movie because it's going to be crap. And I mean that's the assumption. And of course, Paul Feig finally has had enough.
Yeah.
Oh well. And his Twitter is all just. Shut up, shut up, shut up. No, you morons.
Good
let
for
it
him.
Yeah, I can understand his frustration, but, you know, you look at the flip side of it, and it really does feel like a bait and switch where it's, no, it's not a reboot, no, it's not a reboot, no, it's not a reboot. Oh, by the way, we've got all the original cast, but they're playing different parts. So that makes it a reboot. I mean, however you define it, it's a reboot.
It could be a reboot, but we're also, you know, we're not.
It's a reboot.
It doesn't
Columbia University in New York.
Well, it doesn't have to be a reboot.
It is a reboot.
Well, okay. We shall see.
We will. Yes.
We will still
see. I am making an assumption.
Yes, you are. But, frankly, at this point, I'm just enjoying the fact that it sounds like, and they could completely blow it,
yeah.
But it sounds like we might have a fun new Ghostbusters movie coming out. And until...
Maybe.
Yeah, exactly, maybe.
Yeah.
But, and that pleases me. and you know, the fact that we, you know, Rick Moranis basically retired from the industry.
Right.
You know,
he's done.
He chose to focus on family for important reasons. And if he makes a cameo at all, the world will probably explode in a good way. I mean, people will be so excited to see him.
Yeah.
But I'm not expecting him to be there because his focus in life is different. And that's to be commended for focusing on his family. And of course, there's somebody who can't be there.
Right.
And that's always going to be a hole in any kind of return of the cast.
Yeah.
So but it's a good director. It's a good cast of characters. Good actor. You know, good actors or actresses, depending on how you want to term it. For the folks at home, I'm old enough that that actor and actress is how I grew up in the theater, because I was a theater. Yeah. I was a theater guy. And the modern way of looking at that is to call everyone actors, which I'm fine with. I just keep falling into old rhythms.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that.
No, and there isn't. And people, yeah, there's people keep
it's
doing.
It's just not PC.
Everybody's doing. Everybody does it. I mean, people who have been, you know, but it's not a question of PC. It's just a question of somebody decided a while back that the distinction between the two didn't exist.
Okay.
Which is, yeah, well, they do the same job. You know. So for the folks at home, whatever. Anyway. Blah blah blah. I don't apply the cynical part to this. I'm looking forward to hopefully seeing a cool new Ghostbusters movie. And the reason I say that is because there are Star Wars trailers that didn't make me want to beat my head against the wall. You know? And of course we've talked about this on this show before. The physical reaction you get from watching the new Star Wars trailers, if you watched it in the theater when you were a kid, I haven't seen a Ghostbusters trailer yet. But at the same time, the fact that it looks like, and they could screw it up too. It looks like we're getting a really cool Star Wars movie. You know what? Maybe that means we get to have a really cool Ghostbusters movies, because maybe every now and again we get to have a nice thing. There are many indications that this is why we can't have nice things, but I have great faith that every now and again someone gets to bring us a nice thing, and we go, oh, now I have a reference point when I can't have nice things.
Speaking of nice things, that is a good place for us to mention superherostuff.com.
Full of many, many nice many and nice very things. Cool things.
Yes. Right now, I think they're running a 15% off sale with a code.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to superherostuff.com, you can see all of the latest stuff that they've got. Batman shirts, a Thor shirt. Here's a Rocket Raccoon mug Stein thing. New bobbleheads. Funko, you know, the
ooh,
Funko
which,
Pop.
Which new ones?
This is a Batman Arkham Knight.
Yeah.
From the video game.
Okay, cool.
There's some different things there. There's a Jedi Training Academy T-shirt that they've added to the collection. So check all that out at superherostuff.com. When we come back, we're going to actually talk about Mars a little bit as it relates to stories.
Yeah.
That have to do with Mars. So that, when H2O continues right after this.
You're listening to H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Age of Ultron stuff.
Superherostuff.com.
Where can you get Justice League stuff?
Superherostuff.com.
Where can you get Doctor Who stuff?
Superherostuff.com.
Where can you get Daredevil stuff?
Superherostuff.com.
New items being added all the time. Get your superhero stuff at superherostuff.com. Plus, the Hero Box is back. $70 worth of superhero stuff for only $49. Superherostuff.com, where heroes shop.
Atomic Cotton, where Erica and Zach combine their passion for art and film to create wearable art. All original, made with a love for the genre. Coming to a convention near you very soon. Or find them on the web at atomiccotton.com. Atomic Cotton. Shirts and art for fans by fans.
Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is back, and so is our discussion of each and every episode. as we gather down in the super secret underground bunker at World Headquarters. Join us for recaps, analysis, and discussion, with a few digressions along the way, and you do have security clearance to listen. Level 117 every week, part of Sci-Fi for Me Radio, only on scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
You want a multiverse? We've got them all. Get the latest news at scififorme.com.
Back on H2O, Jason Hunt here along with Timothy Harvey.
Hello, hello.
And we are talking about Mars.
The red planet.
Mars needs women. What was that song? Was that Information Society? Who did that song?
Oh,
Mars
wow.
Needs Women.
You know what? That's a good question. Mars needs. I gotta find out.
That was a movie. Jeff Goldblum and Gina Davis.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And of course, Mars Needs Moms, a movie that nobody saw.
Apparently not. Yes, it was. I believe they would call that a flop.
Yes, which was one of the reasons why the New York marketing person who was responsible for John Carter didn't do a very good job promoting John Carter.
Rob Zombie did a cover of Mars Needs Women.
Yeah?
Yeah.
John Carter of Mars.
Yes. Yes.
Which they took off. That's why, yeah, Mars Needs Moms was the reason why they took Of Mars out of the title.
Yeah.
Because nobody wants to see a movie on Mars.
Yeah.
I'm irritated with Amazon, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. So I get on my Kindle, and I'm downloading material. I'm getting a new book, marketing stuff, right? And turns out all of the stuff that I've downloaded onto my Kindle prior to this, including John Carter and the Gods of Hollywood, have been on an account I didn't know I had.
Oh.
My Kindle apparently was set up for an @kindle.com email address, which I didn't know existed.
Oh.
Because I don't need it. I've got an SBC Global address.
Sure.
And, you know, the Sci-Fi for Me address, but the Kindle is on my personal email, and that's what I thought was, well, I'm downloading to all of this. Turns out not to be the case. So I send a note to Amazon customer support saying, hey, you know, this stuff downloaded on this account that I didn't know I had and I don't want.
Right.
Can we, you know, consolidate and put it all on this one? Because I have an account with Amazon already.
Right.
No need to have a new one. And Kindle.com, who's going to use an email address with Kindle.com at the end of it? And I get a note back saying that you can't transfer from one account to another.
Mm.
Can't consolidate.
Really?
Yeah, it's irritating. Very irritating. So now that my Kindle has been synced up to my other email address,
right,
all of the stuff that I downloaded before is gone.
Oh, no.
I mean, it's out there.
Yeah.
But it's on the other address. So if I have to, if I want to find that, I've got to resync my Kindle to that other email address, and I have no idea what the password would be for that one because I never set it up.
Right. Oh, see, that's irritating.
You're killing me, okay. Amazon.
That is irritating. I can see how.
So anyway, but yeah, John Carter and the Gods of Hollywood.
Yeah.
On that account, that I now don't know that I can ever get back into. But that's a story about Mars.
Right.
John Carter of Mars, based on A Princess of Mars, and what was the second one? Warlords of Mars?
Warlords of Mars, yeah.
Barsoom.
Which, you know, great film, terrible execution in terms of the advertising.
Oh, yeah.
And an excellent beginning to what should have been a really fantastic franchise.
Yeah.
But
and hopefully, now that the estate has the story back in their hands,
right?
Maybe at some point we'll get the next one.
That'd be nice.
Maybe.
But it is far from the only film about Mars. We, of course, mentioned Mars Needs Women, which is with Yvonne Craig. Budget for that film.
Was she in
that? Yeah, she was. Budget for that film was $20,000. 20,000 whole monies.
And that was in what year?
65, I think. 65, 66. And it was meant for a theatrical release. It went to TV, where it became a cult film. And again, not the only film about Mars. I think you cannot talk about Mars and movies or television and be in October and not talk about Ray Bradbury.
Oh, yeah.
Because our friend Mitch Bryan, who has worked on Batman the Animated Series, among other things, fantastic screenwriter, he posted today on Facebook the Bradbury paragraph, I guess, two paragraphs, talking about the Autumn People. And it is such a great, you know, and I'm looking at it going, I'm one of those people. apparently I'm evil. It's a so much of Bradbury, it's just beautiful writing. And I think we've talked about this before, I'm pretty sure we have, is that that you can argue that Bradbury is less a science fiction writer than a fantasist.
Yes.
But he wrote a lot of science fiction, and of course he wrote The Martian Chronicles, which is ripe for a proper remake in the cinematic or a televised world. In fact, dear HBO, dear Cinemax, dear Showtime.
I don't know. Given the flap that HBO is looking at right now, I wouldn't
say. Oh, for the Westworld thing?
Yeah.
But did you see that?
It wasn't theirs.
Yeah.
Yeah. They put out a statement. This is Central Casting did this. We didn't do it.
Yeah. But publicity for the show. There's your conspiracy, folks. There's your we want to draw attention to our program.
Which really kind of runs counter to what you would expect coming from Bad Robot.
You would think so. So I'm pretty sure that's I'm gonna go out on, you know, I'm going to suspect that would not actually be the case because of the people involved. But Martian Chronicles is a book full of short stories. It is not a single, there's not a single through line, but they are connected and there is an arc to the stories.
Hence the term Chronicles.
Exactly.
Because it's an anthology.
And for those of you who have not read it, get thee to a bookstore and buy The Martian Chronicles, because it is some of the most interesting and heartbreaking and beautiful and terrifying, optimistic science fiction that you will find.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are moments of that book where humanity is the worst thing. And we are destroying ourselves and we are destroying everything we touch.
Right.
And there are moments of pure joy and optimism in that book. And it ends on a note that is incredibly hopeful. And in the middle of there is a horror, straight up nightmare-inducing horror story.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a romantic comedy, and there is, I mean, it's just, it's a,
you know, it's been so long since I've read that. I need to read it again because it won a Hugo. It's on our list.
Yeah.
It's got to be on our list. Yeah. So, okay. We'll get
it. It won all kinds of awards, but there was a TV adaptation.
Richard Matheson did the script.
Right. And you know that the Matheson script and what was actually shot probably bear a resemblance to each other, because Matheson, while not a perfect screenwriter, managed to produce some really amazing scripts and books, and you generally were in pretty safe territory looking at a Matheson script, whether or not it was directed properly.
Yeah.
And
for those of you who don't know, Richard Matheson wrote the story that became the I Am Legend.
Right.
Soylent Green.
Right.
Those two different movies were based on his
short story. He also wrote The Incredible Shrinking Man.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, goodness. No, he wrote a lot of stuff. Fantastic writer. And very much shaped a lot of entertainment.
Duel,
yeah. It's a lot of this stuff. I mean, he very influential on the writers and filmmakers who shaped this generation,
mm-hmm.
And the current generations of fans. But the execution, unfortunately, on Martian Chronicles,
was according to Ray Bradbury, boring.
Yeah, it was. The pacing was glacial.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's unfortunate. And, of course, it was broadcast on network television at a time when boundaries were not pushable.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was three episodes. Mm-hmm. They were 2 hours apiece.
Right.
And this is back in the day. This is on NBC. Mm-hmm. And 1980 is when it aired.
Mm-hmm.
And this is back when all the networks were doing the big miniseries.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you had Roots, and you had the Thornbirds, mm-hmm. and you know anything and everything that was big.
Right.
Did they do War and Peace at one point?
Yeah, War and Peace, War and Remembrance.
War and Remembrance.
Shogun.
The Blue and the Gray.
Oh, I remember Shogun. Remember, that was huge.
Yeah.
The Thornbirds was huge.
It was Roots was first, and then you had the Thornbirds, and then you had Shogun.
Yeah.
And then all of the rest of them. But NBC did The Martian Chronicles. Rock Hudson mm-hmm. was the build star.
Right.
And Bradbury worked with Matheson on the script, mm-hmm. but by the time it went out into the public, when the network was ready to air it.
Yeah.
Apparently Bradbury found himself being the only person representing the show at a press conference of some sort. Hmm. And they were asking him about it. He's like, it's boring.
Yeah.
And so NBC delayed the airing. It was supposed to go in September of 79, and it didn't actually air until January of 1980.
Yeah.
I guess maybe they had to re-tinker with it or something. But, Rock Hudson was in that, Nicholas Hammond,
mm-hmm.
who went on to play Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Darren McGavin was in it. Roddy McDowell, Bernadette Peters. I mean, there were so many. This is back when, let's throw every actor in Hollywood in the miniseries.
Yeah.
Because all the miniseries did those.
Mm-hmm. You can thank the Poseidon Avenger for that.
That was such a good movie.
Yeah, but I'm sure there were films
any of
before.
The disaster airport.
Yeah, but
Airport 79
or the comedies. It's a mad, 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 mad world. Or
that was good. That was
it's fun.
Yeah, but that was one of those things where let's throw everybody in it,
mm-hmm.
And all of the different stories. But there was a little bit more of a through line in the movie.
Yeah.
With Rock Hudson's character.
Mm-hmm.
Than there was in the books. The books are just a collection of short stories, and they do have an overall theme.
Right. And, I mean, if you read them straight through, all the way through, you have a beginning and a middle and an end, but it's more thematic. It's more big picture than it is. You're not following a single character through these stories. You're following the idea of – you're following the idea of people.
Right.
It's the idea of people through it. And I mean, can you imagine, though? It's 8 hours. 8 hours on...
6 hours.
No. 8 hours on Showtime.
Okay.
Do a story and episode. And there's more than that. But, I mean, realistically, I don't think you could budget to do the entire book in one season. It would be tough to do it properly, I think. But, pick and choose your... And some stories are stronger than others, mm-hmm. things like that. But, give a single episode per story...
Yeah,
and let the different types of stories.
A couple of them could go over two episodes. You think?
Oh yeah. They certainly could. But I think that because I think that you could really, you could gut punch an audience with the range, and do the kind of thing like the model we've got with. And hopefully True Detective gets a third season that gets it back on track. But, with the Daredevil and True Detective and Penny Dreadful model where you've got a short run and you can, really concentrate on getting your story right, it's ripe for that. I mean, anthology books
I would love to see more of that, because the model is the cable model for programs actually lends itself really well to that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if American Horror Story can have what we're on season four.
Yeah.
And they're telling contained stories that
True Detective.
Yeah, True Detective. So I think that it's a good time for it. Showtime, Cinemax, HBO, do this thing. Stars, A&E. Come on, guys. I mean, there's rumor. The rumor mill right now is that they're talking about making a Watchmen television show.
Yeah, TV show.
Which I, you know, there are good arguments for and against, but. Something like The Martian Chronicles would be fantastic for that. And hey, maybe that might get us if the rumors of remaking Something Wicked This May Come might actually get a really fantastic director and because you got to really blow me off my feet on that one, guys, because Jason Robards is the bomb. And Jonathan Pryce is the villain in it's not the greatest adaptation of the novel. I am the first to admit that, but the performances in that film make it something special. So,
right.
Again, not the only Mars film out there. There were a couple of Mars films that came out. We had Val Kilmer in one.
Right.
And then we had...
And Red Planet.
Red Planet, that was his. And then we had Tim Robbins and Gary Sinise in the other one, which was... Oh, wow. Now that's names of things apparently are going right out of my head here. For heaven's sakes. Was that a Ridley Scott? No, that was a Brian De Palma. Brian De Palma's Mars movie.
Ghost of Mars, John Carpenter.
Mission
to Mars.
Mission to Mars was the De Palma one.
Mission to Mars and Red Planet both came out in 2000.
Right. And
those were those two.
Right. And Ghost of Mars was 2001, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and
again.
That was the one, Vampires on Mars.
Right. We're talking this combination, these films grouped together. Red Planet was entertaining, but not a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Mission to Mars was visually very, very cool, but completely falls apart in the last act, where it gets into... Alien Handwavium. and Ghosts of Mars is unfortunately an example of the Carpenter bad years. And it's Natasha Henstridge is in that movie. Mm-hmm. Still relatively fresh from the success of the Species films.
Yep.
Ice Cube is in that movie.
Jason Statham and Pam Grier.
I know.
I mean, Joanna Cassidy.
It's not a good movie.
No.
And it is just, you look at a film like that and you think of Escape from New York and you think of Halloween and you think of,
it was produced by Sandy King.
Yeah.
Sandy King did Battle of the Planets, didn't he?
Oh, wow. Maybe.
Didn't he?
So.
Oh, now I got to look that up.
Yeah, you do. That was a rough couple of years for movies about Mars that would be like really, really good. The Val Kilmer one, Red Planet. I remember watching it and going, "This is okay," but it didn't really excite me. And unfortunately, you had the, spoilers for a movie that's a couple decades old, to have the film work, you have to believe that they would take essentially a hunter-killer robot on a Mars mission so that you could, of course, have it go haywire.
Of course.
Yeah, because that's what happens to all... You know, all robots have the potential to destroy us all. and that almost, you know, we've got it. Well, here, you know, in some ways, The Martian has similar plot elements. You know, they're stranded on Mars. They have to find a way to get home. You know, they have to find a way to get saved and et cetera. You know,
it was Sandy Frank
who did
Battle of the Planets.
But, you know, there was that period of time where it's like, yes, we our conflict cannot be man versus nature. Our conflict must be man versus machine.
You know? Right.
It's like, oh, no. And then, of course, like I said, Mission to Mars, beautiful film. But it was so clearly meant to be Brian De Palma's 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And 2001 worked for, I think 2001 worked for two reasons. I mean, had the impact, the lasting impact that it had for two reasons. One, it came out at the right time. You know, it's a very trippy movie.
Mm-hmm.
The country was in a very trippy place.
Right.
But also, it broke new ground. It did thing, you know, and, you know, nobody was doing model work like that. No one was exploring the beauty of space. No one was, you know, it's big concepts and things like that. And Brian De Palma, God love him, spent a significant chunk of his career trying to be Alfred Hitchcock. And I have enjoyed a great many Brian De Palma films. But yeah, Mission to Mars completely falls apart in the third act. There's some laws of physics problems that develop, and but again, good cast. I mean, it's an entertaining movie. But as a writer, I look at the end and go, really? And yet we didn't learn that lesson for Indiana Jones 4, which has the same story problem. So anyway,
you know, I think Kingdom of the Crystal Skull would have been much better if the chase through the jungle was 15 minutes shorter. I don't know that it lasts 15 minutes even.
It
but
just felt like it.
It felt like it.
There is a fan edit out there of that film.
Yeah.
Which yanks about 80% of the humor out of the movie. And yet, strangely, leaves some very funny bits.
And
because
it's much better.
It's much better.
Yeah, much better cut.
They chopped out so many things. In fact, most of that chase scene is gone. It's
as it should be. I think the most egregious part of that is when they go to the edge of the cliff.
Mm.
And it is so obviously CG. And I thought, wait a minute. That has to be on purpose.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you remember, Lucas had said it's set in the 50s.
Right.
This is a B-movie science fiction, you know, alien thing. So I have to wonder how much of the quote-unquote bad parts of those stories were there because that's what they were going for in terms of the kind of film that he wanted to make.
Well, you know what? having made – when I did the music video a couple of years ago, when we did the car chase scene,
mm-hmm.
We shot the interiors of the cars against green screen.
Right.
And then we put in the backgrounds, right? Like you do if you're
right. Sure.
But we did them so that they looked like the old 1940s process shots. So the backgrounds don't look like they should to the modern eye. But if you watch a 1940s film, what you had was Humphrey Bogart driving down the road, and what you were looking at was Humphrey Bogart sitting in a car, mm-hmm. and behind him there was a projector that was projecting the image of the road onto a screen.
Yep. It was called rear projection.
Yep. And it has a look. It has a feel. And we did our best to reproduce that using modern digital tools.
Yeah.
But I had people look at it and go, well, that looks weird. And for the folks like me and Todd Norris, who shot it, and everybody who knows that I make those kind of movies and appreciates the fact that we were trying to do there, they get it. But there is a huge chunk of an audience that does not necessarily get the storytelling tropes and structures,
mm-hmm.
and the visual
Because it's such an old format.
It's an older format. Nobody watches it
anymore.
And you lose some of that stuff on television. Mm-hmm. If you watch some of that stuff on like a standard definition television, you can some of the fine detail of that disappears. But if you watch it on the big screen and you're seeing that some of the stuff shows up better on HDTV, you can see. But even then, you're looking at it, you know, you're hoping that an audience goes back and watches, you know, old Bogart movies and old Frank Capra films. And
good luck with that.
Yeah. So, you know, there's an audience out there. It's just, it's smaller than I'd like it to be.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah, oh gosh. Santa Claus, was it Santa Claus versus the Martians?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Santa Claus conquers the Martians.
Conquers the Martians. There we go. That's right.
Yeah.
Mars has fascinated us for a very long time. I mean, we have...
Well, War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As far back as then, you know, because that was, what, 18... Something?
Yeah, something. The second of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen comics was based on...
War of the Worlds, 1898.
No.
Gulliver of Mars, 1905.
Yeah.
Actually, we have a copy of that.
Oh yeah.
In our library in the Sci-Fi for Me lit.
Right. Kim Stanley Robinson's Mars books.
Yeah. You know, that reminds me. I'm surprised that no one has tried to adapt Ben Bova's books.
Oh yeah,
Jupiter, Mars.
Right.
He's got a whole series of.
You know what? I don't know.
Why hasn't anybody tried to do that?
That's a really good question. I mean, some of this stuff comes down to budget. I mean, we know that, but it's.
I wonder if we could get the rights to the Martian Chronicles.
Oh, wow.
We could make that. We could do that.
I'll be perfectly honest. We have the skill sets here.
Yeah, we have the technology.
We have the casts. We have some amazing actors in this town.
It's not in the public domain.
No, it's not. Wonder what the movie rights would be. Who would be? Well, okay. Is that a Bradbury Estate question?
I would expect so.
Interesting. Well, and you know that actually comes back to the conversation that our colleague Kendall Sin and I had. Because he always wanted to make an adaptation of The Time Machine and get it right.
Oh yeah.
Because as much as I love, and I love it with a passion, the George Powell Time Machine, the actual ending of The Time Machine, the novel, has never been filmed. And Kendall and I had a long conversation, and I actually started working on an adaptation of that. And it's anyone who has adapted a novel will tell you it is exciting and terrifying and a process that is easy to have life get in the way of.
Mm-hmm.
But we had some really interesting discussions about a proper adaptation, quote unquote proper, more accurate, I guess would be more. H.G. Wells' grandson
Simon.
Simon directed the Guy Pearce adaptation of Time Machine.
Right.
Which has Jeremy Irons in a very curious piece of casting, but as the smart Morlock, the brain Morlock, with one of the best arguments against the hero coming in to save the world.
Right. We've talked about that before.
Yeah. Cause it's
on this very show, in fact.
I know. Aside from the production design of that film, it's gorgeous, but it didn't grab you the way that the Powell version does.
Yeah.
So, but War of the Worlds has been adapted
Good Lord. How many different film versions of that? By then, there's probably a dozen.
Well, there's the George Powell version. There's the Steven Spielberg version.
Mm-hmm. And there's like three different Asylum versions.
Right. Then there's Simon Wells' version.
Goodness, there's been so many different.
Plus the radio play.
The radio plays.
Orson Welles.
There's been the unofficial sequels.
The TV show.
The TV show. That it's appeared in book forms. There's, Sherlock Holmes has fought the Martians in novels. Doctor Who has fought the Martians. Marvel Comics has done, is it Kull? Not Kull. There was a character that, Kilraven,
yes.
Fought the Martians. There's at least one alternate Marvel universe where the Martians conquered Earth. It's certainly engaged us in a way that Venus never quite did. I mean, there have been books about going to Venus, but it doesn't have the same kind of just capture the imagination. I think probably because Mars is this big red thing that looks an awful, it feels like it should be closer to us than it is. I mean, it feels like it should be, and of course the canals, the infamous canals.
And the face.
The face.
Yeah.
All these different things that really just fire the imagination. I mean, the canals really, the idea that there might have been these, the speculation that exploded when Percival Lowell thought that he saw canals on Mars. People were, that kind of just opened the door to imagining a whole world full of people.
Right.
Just right over there. And the cloud cover at on Venus kind of kept us from being able to see anything,
Yep. Although Heinlein took us to Venus with the Space Cadet.
Yeah. Heinlein took us to Mars. We've had lots of, to for a lot of people, Mars feels like the stepping stone out. Even though it may not be the best one in terms of,
it's going that direction.
Yeah, it feels
that away,
and it's close enough.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like it. And because it has captured the imagination as much as it does, I think it maybe has a possibly oversized grasp on our public imagination, but it's certainly one that you have these kind of discoveries, or you have the Mars rover and things like that, and it's right. It's justified. But I think that if Venus was in its place and it was all cloud cover, I don't think we'd have that. We wouldn't have that same kind of engagement with the planet.
Probably not.
Well,
and I think too the other challenge with Venus is the fact that it's so hot you can't get in there.
Oh yeah,
to even see anything about
which we didn't know. There's many many Venus stories that are completely ruined by science.
Yeah,
it's like, and I'm down on the surface of Venus. No, you're not.
Space Cadet being one of them.
Yeah, no, you're not. Yeah. You're not. You're dead. I'm sorry.
Yes.
But at the same time, We have this amazing ability when we put our minds to it in the space program to come up with some fascinating solutions to things like, pressure and heat.
Right.
But I can't remember who it was. I can't remember. I think it was a, I can't remember if it was a NASA guy or if it was just a scientist that they were talking to. And they pointed out the fact that if we have water on Mars, we've got hydrogen and oxygen, and that's called rocket fuel.
Yep.
So you can get there, and maybe you could generate your own fuel back. And, it's like, again, fires the imagination. We don't know yet. But it does, it engages us.
Or it gets you enough fuel to get out to the asteroid belt.
Yeah, we know there's...
Yeah, and there's tons of mineral out there.
Yeah, and we know, it's...
Which could be fuel and
And then you look at some of these outer moons... Mm-hmm. Which more and more seem to have the potential for life, or of some kind.
Yeah.
And, get out to Europa and
rocket stopped.
Make no landing.
all these planets are yours, save Europa. Attempt no landings here. You know, if we get a probe out to Europa and somebody at NASA doesn't troll the world, I'm going to be incredibly disappointed. Because
yeah, they have to.
The opportunity. Oh, yeah. You mean this? We've just got a message in, and it says, oh, crap. Even if that's all they do.
Yeah.
You know, or my God, it's...
It's full of...
Yeah. Because if they... Because you know the kids at NASA, the men and women at NASA who are behind all this this amazing stuff, you know they're science fiction fans.
Well, you know, who made The Martian, the movie? Was it Warner Brothers? That out, or Universal?
You know, I don't know.
When they made the announcement that there was evidence of waters on Mars, mm-hmm. they put on Twitter, they took the Bring Whatley Home meme been going on, that poster. Somebody put one together that said, send Whatley a straw.
Yeah.
Somebody had fun with it. But yeah,
it's 20th century.
20th century Fox. But I mean, Mars has always been one of those fascinating planets that you're right. It does capture the imagination in ways that the other planets have not.
Mm-hmm.
And you gotta wonder if that's because there's been so much of the science fiction literature that has centered around Mars. Or if it's been the other way around. I mean, there has to be some.
Well, it's a synergy. I really think thing. Because up until when you look at the Greeks and the Romans and a lot of the ancient peoples, ancient cultures looked up at the stars and the planets, and they assigned them religious roles,
right?
But then as we got into the Age of Enlightenment, the Ages of Reason, the Industrial Ages, our fiction changed. And, you know, the way we told stories changed, certainly, over the millennia. And you get to, I really want to say that the switch that flipped was, you know, that illusion that there were canals there. Mm-hmm. And if there were canals there, that meant that there was... Again, if there's water, there's life.
Yeah, and if there's canals, somebody built them.
Yeah.
Which means there's people on Mars.
Exactly, yeah. And I think, and of course, this is the same period of time when we thought people lived on the moon, too. So, I mean, the science wasn't there, but the imagination was. Mm-hmm. And if there's somebody who lives there, you know, we were dealing with, especially, you know, you look at H.G. Wells, you know, we're looking, you have European history there. And, of course, he was... So much of his fiction was looking at the history of Europe and England and extrapolating a nightmare out of it. Because there's a lot of, you know, a lot of Wells's stuff is political commentary, really.
Yeah. Very much like Orwell.
Yeah. Because, of course, Orwell wasn't talking about a future Britain.
No.
He was talking about Britain right now.
Yeah.
Post-war World War II Britain. And it was right there. It was, you know,
well, an Animal Farm was his commentary on Stalin.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But of course, you don't. You know, you can if you get it, you get it. And if you don't get it, you still got a great story.
Yeah.
But I really think that you look. You know, he looked at the war machine that was building in Europe. You know, because that was 1800s was still the age of empire. It was the dying age of empire, but it was still. You know, you had Prussia. And you had England. England was still a world power.
This is even back before World War One.
Yeah, this is before the World War One kind of created, in many ways, created the modern world that we're familiar with. Just because, you know, it started it. World War Two pushed it along in ways, and of course, it's always evolving. But I mean, those are in terms of breaking Europe in the way that it did, in both cases. But so you have this, you know, that the canals and the explosion of thought and imagination that came out of that. And then they fed on each other, because the more we wrote about it, the more we wondered about it, mm-hmm. and the more we wanted to go there. And then when, of course, we start sending
probes there, and we start sending, you know, we have satellite flybys, or I'm sorry, we have explorer, you know, the various
Voyager goes back.
And we get little pieces of information, yep. And we get just enough to go,
tell me more.
Exactly. And then we actually get a rover on there, and it's like, it is a bunch of dirt, mm-hmm. and it's dirt, and it's rocks, and there's nothing to be seen except dirt and rocks.
Yeah.
But it's an alien world. We're, you know, there's a thing we built. There's a thing
on another planet
with wheels and it goes.
Yeah.
We sent a model car to Mars. I mean, that is just, that's America yeah. right there. You know, it's like, you know,
yeah.
And that's just really pretty amazing. And you think about the fact that every little piece of information we get, we've seen so much the science fiction, the world of science fiction has become the world we're living in.
See, and that's something that I've been thinking about could be a topic for a future episode is how much we are now living in a science fiction age, mm-hmm. and has the genre evolved to the point where we've caught up? Where do we go next?
You know what? That's a very interesting topic because I think it's some of it has been... Some of it has changed the kind of stories writers are telling,
mm-hmm.
because the extraordinary in a lot of that science fiction has become the commonplace.
Right. Especially in terms of technology.
Yeah. And yes, as much as we want the jetpack, we are aware that the jetpack would be dangerous and that flying cars are a terrible idea. However,
Mattel still has a couple of weeks to come out with that hoverboard.
I know.
Yeah.
And they should. But yeah, so it's the it has very much so. I think it's influenced. It's changed the way we're the kind of stories we're telling. But
yeah.
for good and for ill, like anything else with storytelling. But I don't know. There is nothing that they could basically say about Mars, no matter how quote unquote, you know, how dull quote unquote, mm-hmm. that we would not be kind of excited about, because it's another piece of another world. And
yeah. Well, and according to Buzz Aldrin, we would have, if they'd gone with the original timetable, mm-hmm. the plan that had been before Apollo, even
right,
we would have had an operational base on Mars by 1980. If you can imagine that.
Well, I think we would have tried. I think that...
We would have gotten close.
Well, I mean,
it probably wouldn't have timed out to be that year.
Well, and I think we would have run into we would have run into some of the technology issues of that they're looking at now,
yeah.
and asking themselves, how are we going to make this work? Because...
Which is really surprising because, you know, you hear all this time, you know, we've got more computing power in our smartphones
mm-hmm.
than they had for the entire Apollo mission.
Well, but they were also more willing to risk lives.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because they were sitting there going, life isn't valuable. But
the knowledge was worth it.
But the knowledge was worth it. But they also, at the level of technology, you basically got a note when you signed up the astronaut program, mm-hmm. and you said the first, you know, it's basically, oh, by the way, you might die. There was never, you know, there was, never. You know, they were certainly going to do their best to keep him alive.
Well, and I think that's one thing. I think that's actually hampered the space program since Challenger and Columbia.
Oh, sure.
You know, we've gotten to a point now where nobody wants to take the risk. The suits don't want to take the risk.
I was going to say the astronauts, because no. you know I think the astronaut
yeah, the
program.
The astronauts are ready to go.
Well, if you look at the astronaut program, when it's born out of a test pilot program, I mean that's really the first astronauts were test pilots. These are guys who were willing. These are guys who craved adventure. Mm-hmm. They were, you know, they would hop in a plane that, you know, could go Mach whatever, but also might disintegrate in midair.
Yeah, they were on the edge.
You took that chance because you loved it.
Right.
And those were their first astronauts. So those are the guys who were, they were willing to risk. And I would say very much that I would have great faith that the current crop of astronauts are people who
for science, for exploration, would and do take risks. Space is deadly.
Oh, yeah.
Space is not a safe place to go.
Yeah, but we're at the point now where we don't go any further than orbit.
Right, and I think that
it's a shame.
Yeah, well,
because
it is a shame.
You know we should have already figured out some way to do a manned mission to Mars.
Well, they have.
I think the bean counters and the people what in charge have sat there and said, it costs too much, or it's the PR fiasco that would result if anything went wrong.
Well, I think
their priorities are messed up.
Well, I think they understand how to get there. They want they also want to bring our people back. And
sure.
That's where it gets tricky.
That's
where technology wise it gets tricky. But this is it. There was a time.
But you could slingshot back.
Well, but there was a time in exploration when the idea of coming home wasn't your priority.
Mm-hmm.
The idea was to go see what's beyond the horizon,
yep.
To go see what's over there, to go see what's beyond. And because if you hopped on your boat and sailed over there, it took a long time.
Right. And there was a chance you'd never come back.
There was a very good chance you'd never come back because you didn't know it was over there.
Yep.
Could be somebody with a sharper stick or a bigger sword.
Here be monsters.
That's right. Here be dragons.
Be dragons.
And we are, quite sensibly, most of us like the idea of going someplace and returning in one piece.
A lot of us like the idea of dragons, though.
I know. Well, and that's why we still have a space program. However much it is what it is, yeah. And however much of it is not manned. But yeah, they still want it. We're never going to stop wanting to know. And it doesn't matter what party's in charge or which administration is doing what. We're going to get there, whether it's a government program or a private program, whether it's NASA or Harriman. little Heinlein reference for you folks. We're going to get out there, and there will be somebody on. There's going to be somebody walking on Mars in my lifetime.
You think?
I think
it's going to be this
soon?
I
am 45 years old. Yes. I think it will be in my lifetime. And I think we will probably, I would be surprised. And I could be, I really hope I'm right. But I would be surprised if we didn't have a proper springboard. Either in place or on its way in my daughter's lifetime. I mean, if nothing else, a springboard to the outer planets. Even if we're starting just to build one,
right? Just to go.
So I'm thinking within the next century. Within the next century, we could. All it's going to take, he said. All it's going to take. And we see this not necessarily not just in us because the Indian space program has taken off. Every now and again, China does a great leap forward when it comes to space exploration, and it's ultimately going to have as much rah rah USA. It's going to be to do the kind of stuff we want to do. It's going to take more than one country.
Probably
you're going to have to throw this stuff costs money. And we do want to bring people home. And once, that immediately increases your budget. If you go, well, can I suppose.
Yeah.
If we want them to eat when they get there, you got to have space and room, and that means more thrust and et cetera. So, but we proved it can work. Even, the U.S. and Russia don't necessarily get along stupidly after all this time. But our scientists do on the International Space Station.
Mm-hmm.
The scene in 2010, both book and movie, where the U.S. and Russia are on their way to nuclear, they're playing nuclear brinkmanship games, and the Russian and American crews sit there and say, "Screw it, we're going to do the science."
Yep.
That's the hope for
getting off the planet is not the politicians and not the programs. It's the people who want to be in the programs. It's those scientists and astronauts, and they come in, then it doesn't matter what country they're from.
Yeah.
They're the ones who look up and go, I want to go there. I want to go there and do the thing.
Yeah.
Can I go and do the thing?
And if you want to be in our program,
yes,
there's a way you can do that as well. You could send us an email, h2o@scififorme.com, or you can leave a comment either on our social media or on our main site, scififorme.com. It sounds like I'm repeating myself, but I'm not really. On the social media, we're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, Google+, YouTube, and Tumblr. And we also have a hotline. You can call and leave a message. It's 573-42-SCIFI. We do have that Patreon campaign that's over there to add to our resources. If you would like to support us in our work here with a financial component of some sort, you can do that over at patreon.com/scififorme. And as always, we do invite you to share the links, both our podcasts and our news articles that you can find over at scififorme.com. Share those with your friends and your family, people that you think would be interested in this kind of stuff, the genre stuff. And we do also invite you to go check out superherostuff.com, our sponsor. We do thank them for their support.
Oh, yes, always.
For the show. And that's going to do it this week. Next week, something else.
We will talk about a thing.
We'll talk about a thing. Stuff and things.
And it will be marvelous.
And we're inching closer to episode 100.
I know.
It's right around the corner. It'll be here before we know it.
Well, it's as many as we've done is kind of here before we know it. It's
yeah.
Like, it's like, hang on, how long have we been doing this?
2 years.
I know.
2 years.
That's kind of cool.
It is. All right. Thanks very much for listening, folks.
Thanks, folks.
Jason Hunt here with Timothy Harvey.
Always a pleasure.
Check out our other podcasts over at Sci-Fi for Me Radio, and we will be back next Friday.
Right.
On the new schedule starting next week.
This has been a presentation of scififorme.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.